Support for this podcast comes from Frito-Lay and the 2023 Snack Bracket Championship. The Frito-Lay Snacker Challenge is underway, and fans are voting on their favorite snacks to crown champion. We're talking about primetime matchups between the best 64 snacks in the land. Will Ruffles Ridges reign supreme? Can Doritos defend their dynasty? Or will Smart Food use their smarts for a surprise upset? Only you can decide. Get in on all the action for a chance to win up to $1,000 or a year's worth of snacks. Let your snacks be heard. Just go to FritoLaySnackIt.SBNation.com to vote and enter for a chance to win. No purchase necessary. Sweepstakes ends April 3rd, 2023. Void where prohibited. Year's worth of snacks awarded in the form of 52 coupons, each good for one bag of chips. See official rules at FritoLaySnackIt.SBNation.com.
Welcome everybody to the Longhorn Republic, your source for Texas Longhorn news, sports, and opinions with a bit of snark built in. We are a podcast of Burn Orange Nation, and you can find more great Texas Longhorn content over at burnorangenation.com. If you like what we do, please leave us a rating or review on Apple Podcasts. It helps get the show out there. Share this with your friends. Maybe you found it, whether it was Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn, Spotify, anywhere where you find fine podcast content. You can find Kyle and myself. Connect with us on social media at Longhorn Pod on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram, The Longhorn Republic, or shoot us an email, longhornrepublicpod@gmail.com. My name is Gerald Goodridge. I'm your host this week, like I am every week. And I'm joined by a man who knows the difference between Renee Zellweger and Jay Mohr, Kyle Carpenter. Kyle, how are you?
That's M-O-H-R, Mohr, like the confidence, man. I have heard people describe the confidence of an older... let's just say a Caucasian man of privilege, and Mr. Brando was that. I mean, just to ever walk through life and say something so confidently with your whole chest and just be that wrong on national TV. I get why my guy had to struggle through the next 12 plays trying to justify his mistake. When I will say, Renee Zellweger and Jay Mohr have a slightly different figure. When basically it reminded me of the guess this Pokemon, and it's very clearly Pikachu's shape. Like it's like, come on, buddy, what do you got here? You going Jay Mohr, the pride of Verona, New Jersey? Anyways, it was not the only thing Brando got wrong on that broadcast.
No, not at all. I was trying to decide what was funnier to me, like him being so confidently wrong about it being Jay Mohr. The doubling down on like Jerry Maguire facts, like about like showing off how much you knew about Jerry Maguire, or going through Jay Mohr's filmography for the next like 7 to 10 plays, right? Like that was the weirdest thing in the world to me. Like of all of the weird Brando things, like just what is even going on? Like why?
Like he there was a play when Anthony Cook made an open field tackle on a tight end. There was not another Longhorn anywhere near the play, and he says overshown with the tackle, and then like clearly someone in his ear was like, "That's not overshown," and he's like, "Well, it looks like Cook was in the tackle overshown there with him." He just couldn't admit, like, "Yeah, I misspoke," right? Like I said it wrong. He called draw plays inside zones. He misdiagnosed pass routes. He called. Consistently, even the player who ended up hurting another player came back from a commercial break to correct himself. Consistently, just missed, just frustrating. With the host of new talent, right? With your Golics and whether you love them or hate them, RG3, like these guys who are coming in and are great. Like some of this old guard needs to be put out to pasture. They're just Brando's been not great, but I will say. Getting him, who he doesn't always say nice things about Texas, to admit that. Weird that he zeroed in only on the holding call, but that there was a holding call on Bryce Young's missed on Bryce Young's scramble that led to the final field goal was a win for Texas fans, I guess.
I mean, we're still at war with Brando based on Sark being the coach at Texas currently and him saying it wasn't going to happen. But we're not here to talk about bad announcers. We're here to talk about good football. Texas. Mm. Took care of West Virginia 38-20 and a lot wider margin than the score actually indicates. Texas led by as much as 28 points in that game, 28-0 in the first half, and took their foot off the brake. Obviously, they only scored 10 points in the second half, and I'm fine with that if it's working. We'll just talk about that in a little bit. If the strategy is working, I'm fine with it. But they probably could have hung 60 if they tried to, like other teams in the conference. Only four drives for Texas in the second half. Very content to run that thing out. And, you know, the fourth quarter, I think both teams just wanted to get out of there after what happened to C.J. Donaldson, and we're so glad that he's okay. He was able to travel with the team, and obviously thoughts and prayers. That is the scariest part about football, and you and I are both going to talk about that later on today. But I think at the end, like, both teams just wanted to get out of there, where Texas was like, we're going to give you everything in front of us, keep the clock moving, we're going to run the ball, try to get out of here. It's so I unfortunately had to experience this. It's so weird trying to pick a game back up after somebody gets, like, carted off and taken off in an ambulance. It's just such a terrible feeling. And, like, nobody wants to be there. So, like, I'm fine with them just, like, just let's just dribble this thing out.
Yeah, and the good news is it seems positive reports in at least – most of the most scary possibilities have been ruled out. Just a bad concussion, it seems, which, you know, not to minimize a bad concussion, that's was definitely a really scary moment, but good news all around that he traveled back with the team, seems to be progressing back towards playing again, which is great. This game was interesting, Gerald, in that second half, right, when you say it. Like, I've seen some people complaining. We actually got some folks in the live chat after the show asking, you know, what we thought about the fourth quarter getting outscored, the fourth quarter defense, second half defense. Yes, in the second half they were outscored 13-10, but they only had four drives in the second half. They scored on their first, they punted on their second, which featured a first and 30 right after some penalties, and then a sack, first and 30, and then you give up a sack. So a tough little spin right there, and then they probably go for it on fourth down if it's, you know, a different game, if it's closer, if you don't have what Gerald just talked about, kind of the emotion in the room, and then they kneeled inside the 20 where they very easily could have gotten three, if not seven, on that final drive. So I think, you know, obviously grains of salt. I think, you know, like Gerald always says, the real statistical models will throw a lot of that out anyways as pure garbage time. So Texas, you know, won this comfortably. Actually, there was a net stat that our friend Stats at War Parker does that actually, and it was wild, said that both UTSA over Middle Tennessee and Texas over West Virginia were bigger beatdowns than TCU over OU, which I don't know that I've seen many beatdowns bigger than what TCU put on OU, but nonetheless, Texas did it. I don't think there's any doubt about that, and we'll break down and talk a little bit about how they did it. But Gerald, I wanted to ask one thing that I noticed. I want to see if you picked up on this. On the first down yardage differential, yards per first down play run, Texas obviously good, West Virginia not so good. I'll give you that hint. How wide do you think this yardage differential was between the horns and the ears?
You went overall or per play?
I'll take per play.
I'd probably say West Virginia is somewhere in like the 3.5 range, and Texas was probably 7.
Yeah, it's 5 whole yards per play that Texas was better. It's 3.9 to 8.9. Like, it is Texas almost getting a first down, averaging, you know, 90% of a first down on their first down plays, and West Virginia getting square in, you know, hope we have a good second down play and can put a manageable third down out there, right? It's two very wildly different things. I think, you know, we'll talk about some of what the offense and defense did, but I just thought that stat jumped out at me. And of course, Texas had a couple big plays on first downs after they converted, went right to home run plays, which I love, the taking shots on first down, which certainly floated that average a bit. But nonetheless, I think that's kind of your story of the game.
The overall offensive efficiency from Texas, like 7.4 yards per play. Now, that's floated a bit by the fact that Texas had like 13 chunk plays or big plays or, you know, whatever you want to call it. But the offense was moving. The offense was humming. The offense was moving so well that wide receivers were throwing touchdowns, right? Like, that's how well the offense was playing. And it was a little bit of like West Virginia being kind of the cure for the common offense this year. They're just not... they're not a good team this year. I love the West Virginia folks more than I probably should. They're really good people. But overall, it just seems like there's a, like, there, I don't know what, I mean, obviously I think Neil Brown's just out the door. Like, I think that's part of it. It's just, it's not working. So I think some of that has to do with West Virginia just being bad, but Texas was doing everything they needed to do. And we've seen Texas play down to bad teams before. We saw it against UTSA. Not saying UTSA is a bad team, but they're not the UTSA of 2021, right? Like, we saw that a couple weeks ago where Texas played down to them. And so them being able to play consistent and play and get these chunk plays and Hudson Card to really play winning football. And again, people are going to talk about the misses, but he was really, really good.
Yeah, and look, Hudson Card's playing winning football. We talked about it immediately after, and that was kind of my first initial takeaway, was you just saw a quarterback playing winning football for his team. He's gotten better each game as he's gotten healthier and as he's settled into the offense and Sark has figured out kind of how to call to his strengths. You've seen a quarterback getting better and better. You saw a guy on his first touchdown to Worthy on the out route where he stood in the pocket. There was kind of a two blitzers who came, and both the pulling guard and Bijan picked up the same guy. So it was definitely he was going to take a shot. And he stood there and held it for a second so that Worthy could run that really beautiful kind of I think I've heard it called the spoon route or whatever where into out, and it takes a second to develop, right? But Card stepped, you know, held Braveheart style, hold, knowing he's going to get hit so that he could throw it just before the contact came and get a pretty wide open Worthy who beat his man for the first touchdown. Also climbed the pocket on a deep throw to Worthy later on in the game where, you know, the pocket collapses. And in week one or two of Card, last year of Card, you see him go down or take off to scramble with some happy feet. But instead, he climbs the pocket, eyes downfield, sees Worthy. Again, if he has enough room there to really step it or just the natural arm strength to really, you know, chunk it, Worthy was 5 yards behind. This guy could have had a touchdown. But again, I'm just going to call it an absolute plus and winning play from Card to even get that ball out there and get one of those big chunk plays that Gerald referenced. That's 10 passes over 15 yards that were thrown in this game. I think really, like, really great performance from Card. And it's the way that we talk about Roschon Johnson making the selfless move to running back when the team needed it, right? I think Hudson Card keeping his head down, not saying anything when he wasn't named the starting quarterback, coming in and playing his butt off, and then, you know, knowing that probably when Ewers comes back fully healthy, whether that's this week likely or whenever that is, we'll take a spot and go right back to being the understudy, ready to come in at a moment's notice. I think it will affect the way people look at Hudson Card, right? What Gerald declared it a while back, there will be no Hudson Card slander allowed anymore on this, you know, these here Longhorn streets. And I think he's earned that, right? I think Hudson Card has played himself gritty, gutty, you know, just win it. Like I said, playing winning football has earned the respect, absolutely, of the Longhorn faithful.
He should. He absolutely should have your respect. I mean, the guy came in against Alabama on one good leg and almost won the game, and then he came back the next week and won a game. And, you know, he played winning football against Texas Tech. It was not his fault. If a couple of balls bounce the right way, Hudson Card is undefeated as a starter for Texas in relief. And he played really great winning football. He got other receivers involved as well. We have to talk about, obviously, Xavier Worthy getting into it. But not only did Xavier Worthy find Jatavion Sanders for a touchdown pass, but so did Hudson Card, right? And I think one of the questions that I had going into this game and into conference play is, like, Worthy needed to get started, and we feel like this is probably Worthy's get started game, but, like, who is going to be the other guy, right? Because Texas can force it to Worthy all day. We saw them try to do that last year, and it didn't work out. And so the fact that Jatavion Sanders is having already one of the best seasons by a tight end since 2011, and we're five games in, is a portent of good things, right? He had a couple of games where he took a step back. And part of that, we talked about it, Hudson Card doesn't always look to the tight end like he should. He doesn't go through his progressions and his reads like he could. But the fact that he was able to find him for 5 receptions, 78 yards, and 2 touchdowns, first tight end to have 2 touchdowns since 2011. I was like, not only is 2 touchdowns in a game the most since DJ Grant and Blaine Irby both did it in 2011, but he also ties them with 3 touchdowns as the most touchdowns by a Texas tight end since 2011. Next, like, record for him, or next, like, high watermark for him is JerMichael Finley at like 500 yards and 5 touchdowns. It's like he's pushing rarefied air for Texas tight ends, which is a weird thing to say, but like Texas having a second legitimate receiving threat as a tight end. And oh wait, Julio Billingsley comes back in 2 weeks, guys. Like the offense is going to take an uptick, and we'll talk about this more on Thursday. I don't know if it's going to take a Herculean offensive effort to beat OU, but having these options are going to bode well as Texas continues to go through this conference grind.
Yeah, and we've talked about it, right? Like Texas fans are enamored and rightfully so romantically linked to the tight end. David Thomas, an all-timer, Bo Scaife, like, you know, we've had guys late, like Beck and Swaim are both in the league, right? Like, not always the guy, the big play tight end, but just lovable guys. We love a tight end. We want to root for a tight end. And so there's been a lot of hope for Sanders. But what you saw Ewers do early in the year and what you wanted Card to do in those first few games was use that tight end as a safety blanket, which Vince Young did to an absolute aplomb in his career, right? But use that tight end to get get the ball out of your hands, get a couple yards, get to the next play. Maybe he breaks it and does something. Sanders had some deep catches, but he also had a couple of those. And again, to go back to Card, there was a couple times when he scrambled a bit and, you know, made the eye contact or directed the receiver, hey, fade this up over that, you know, back and I'll lob it into you, right? He did that once to Sanders on the sideline. Like, these are good plays and good to have that chemistry. And again, I hope Ewers or Card, whoever the quarterback is, continues to use that. I do think Sanders can do everything, right? He blocked well. He caught the kind of deep seam pass from Worthy perfectly, but caught four other passes well. You can design stuff for him. He would have even bigger stats, right? Again, remember Kool-Aid McKinstry pinning both of his arms down to him, which apparently is not pass interference in the end zone. And Ewers actually was I think, trying to get a play too. Sanders on a schemed up kind of double action to him on the play he got hurt on. So they want to get the ball to Sanders in the red zone in the field. They want to use him, and I think, you know, we'll only see him continue to get some numbers. This is the Pro Football Focus National Team of the Week, Jatavion Sanders, that we're talking about here. I do think Jordan Whittington also looked really good in this one. Blocked well, as we've been saying, but also had three catches for 58 yards. Really liked they schemed up a double tight end kind of blocking screen for him, and he showed some acceleration that, honestly, I think if it was anyone, you know, anyone but Worthy doing that, it doesn't look real. I mean, he just made the defense where it looked like they had him. All of a sudden, it's a 20-yard gain down the field because he just ate up space. I've only really seen Xavier Worthy have that kind of explosiveness against defenses to make them look like they're running half speed. So hoping Whittington gets some more, gets another breakout. But other than those three, there were seven other catches, all by running backs. So Sark said that receivers have been practicing as well as they have. Kane did get held in the red zone, which would have been a touchdown catch, right? And Bijan ran it in for a touchdown the next play. So tough for him, but it does seem like Kane gets held more than any of our receivers. But, you know, hoping we can get, whether it's Jai Hall or we can get Billingsley when he's back, or Kane, someone to step up to help just take the load a little bit off these guys. But right now, Sark is working with the weapons, right? Like, get the ball to your playmakers, Worthy, Sanders, Whittington, and then, of course, we'll talk about the running backs, are the guys. And so I don't mind it whatsoever. You can play very efficient winning football with those guys.
Yeah, and I think, I mean, that is what Texas needs to do, is just play efficient football, play within yourself, play with the weapons that you have. And Texas has some weapons in the backfield as well. Bijan Robinson kept him on to hit 100, 21 carries for 100 yards and a touchdown. I know it feels like they kept him on to get 100, but it also feels like they put him back out there because Tashard Choice was giving him some coaching on his running and his running style. And so they decided to let him live that out in the game is honestly some of the vibe that I got. Roschon Johnson, a slower night for him, six carries for 20 yards. And he also had two catches for 21. The interior of this defense and Texas's ability to get 3 yards when it needs it is still a concern, especially with Baylor and Oklahoma State and even OU on the horizon. Like, the fact that, and I'm Pro Football Focus, you can take it or leave it, like, part of their grading system is subjective because they don't actually know what the assignments are, what the calls are on the line. They're just basing it on what they think best case scenario is. But Texas is the number one, like, graded rushing team and the number, or in the Big 12, they're the number one graded rushing team and the number 10 graded rush blocking team, according to Pro Football Focus. And so, like, there is something to be said about the running backs having to do too much work. And this is really where, and people may have thought we were crazy when we were saying it, but it felt like the injury to Junior Angula was going to have a bigger impact on the offense than Isaiah Nayor. And I think we're seeing the fruits of that bear out right now. And so I'm curious to see, like, you know, Texas has some freshmen in there already. I'm wondering where DJ Campbell's development curve is. I mentioned it at postgame. I'm going to mention it every week until we see him pretty consistently. Now, I will say all 5-star offensive linemen are different. All bodies are different, right? They're the guys who are more ready-made to come in, or you got a guy like DJ Campbell who has a lot of the measurables and the ceiling, but still needs to work, especially DJ Campbell needs to work. Pass pro is probably where they're working with him the most, just based on what his high school offense ran. But like, I'm curious to see what Texas and what Kyle Flood can do to shore up the inside of the that offensive line, because that's going to kneecap you at some point. And it did a little bit against OU. It did a lot against Texas Tech. We saw it. It's part of the reason why Texas has that really ugly loss. It's probably going to look uglier as the year goes. That, to me, is the big question in the running game, in spite of all of Bijan's success.
Yeah, you look at their power rushing number, right? Converting when you need 2 yards or less, they were 1 for 7, right? There were third down rushing conversions from Bijan, but they were usually more than 2 yards, right? It felt like sometimes the good rushes, right? And I will say, just to your point in the beginning, keeping him in for 100 may have been a part of it, but they also pulled him out in the series before that, and Coach Choice, you know, didn't have to say anything. Bijan was more upset at himself, but held him out in that series. And when they went back for one more series, I saw Bijan run with a downhill kind of force, and he instantly made it look like the line was giving him 5 yards because he was going so hard through holes. And instead of kind of waiting and making each guy miss, just went and said, I'm going to get through you, past you, get to the next level. And so if that ignited something, I'd love that we close out the game with that, with a little bit of confidence, and he takes that into OU. We'll talk about it in our preview, but I think there's a lot of meat on the bone for Bijan to just eat against that OU defense. But yeah, I mean, I think a good game for him, not his best game, but a good game. Roshan, a tough game, and I think a lot of that is back to the line. Roshan could have had some big receiving numbers. There was Card, kind of, they ran that wheel route twice. One time, Card threw him a little bit to where, you know, Roshan couldn't catch it in stride and just go. Another time, Roshan looked like he was trying to wait for it to hit him in stride and just kind of fell in front of him wide open, or he could have had some green space in front of that one. So they'll work on that. But yeah, I do think, you know, though it's nice to see Bijan the second place in the Big 12 in most missed tackles force after only the total Texas team, including Bijan. That's Texas 66, Bijan 40, next team 38, and OU fourth at 36. So Bijan is better than every other team in the Big 12 at making people miss. He can do that. I hope he doesn't have to do that, right? We talk about run blocking and what we absolutely missed from Mangalau and how that was the strength, and we absolutely, if you look at this team, and we'll talk about it on the defensive side as well, but the focus of where they hurt last year and say they spent all their XP on that this offseason, it does seem like they said, you know what, we didn't pass block very well. Well, they're pass blocking better. Certainly, pass blocking much better this year. In fact, Cole Hudson, who's gotten some of the fury, was our top graded pass blocker per PFF this week. And Dante Stills is really good, right? You have to keep an eye on him. And he was a lot of times between Hudson and Banks. And so good on him. But yeah, I mean, they have regressed in the run block. Obviously, the Angelou missed that a ton. But, you know, can they level that out? And then when we switch over to the defensive side of the ball, I don't think anyone, when you talk about the running game for the offense, I don't think anyone on the other side thought that stopping the run would be the strength of this Texas team after what we saw last year.
No, and especially against West Virginia, a team that is likely to run the ball. And we talked about Donaldson and his injury, but like he also just had a lack of production before that. And so the Texas offense got it done. They played winning football. And if they can play winning, if they come out and play the same game against OU as they did against West Virginia, then we probably end up with a decent result in Dallas.
Today's episode is brought to you by Cars.com. With over 2 million vehicles and 50,000 more added every day, Cars.com will match you with the perfect car for you, your budget, your life, your style. And if you're ready to say goodbye to your current car, Cars.com will get you an instant offer to cash it in. Just start by entering your license plate and get matched with a local dealer who will write you the check. So whether you're looking to buy or sell, just go to Cars.com. It's magical.
So moving on to the defense, it was a it was a first half dominant performance that I think looks worse as you think about how they decided to play the second half. And I'll just say it like that, because again, they were very aggressive. They attacked a lot. They played a lot of press and kind of kept everything close to them, were very aggressive in the first half. And then I think because of game state and how things were going, they decided to keep West Virginia in front of them. They knew that West Virginia wasn't going to break away from them. They knew West Virginia wasn't going to have a ton of yak yardage. So if you keep them in front of them and keep them in the middle of the field, they're going to put together 7-8 minute scoring drives when they're down 4 touchdowns. It's a winning solution for the defense, if you ask me. But West Virginia overall, 9 of 18 on third downs, 3 of 5 still on fourth down, so something to be concerned about. 30 rushes for 61 yards for a team that was coming into the game averaging around 200 yards. Jalen Ford continues to be, you and I talked about him in our preseason show, like Jalen Ford, we thought he was going to be a dude, and he is a dude, and then some. He is on pace to exceed Malik Jefferson's massive 100-plus tackle year, and he didn't have a single tackle in game one.
Yeah, I mean, it's really great what Ford is doing. It's great what the linebacking core is looking like, you know, and I hinted at it earlier, but in both the pass and the run game, right, the defensive line gets a lot of credit for the run stops, but 30 rushes for 61 yards, you know, to a carry for a team that was close to 200 coming in, was a big win, right? I think when West Virginia couldn't get that and had to rely on the pass and became a little bit one-dimensional, they're still a dangerous offense, right? Like, this is a team that, as bad as their defense has been, their offense has won them some games and has kept them in some games because Daniels is a good quarterback, and they have three really good receivers. Texas has played multiple teams this year, right? Take ULM out, and even Tech has above-average wide receivers. UTSA, one of the best group of five, you know, group of three receivers that you will see, like, quite likely the best. And so, I mean, then you take this, the three that they came in with, just, I mean, the wide receivers, just their two biggest receivers, were averaging 200, or not averaging, had total 258 yards after a catch. It looks like, you know, they maybe, like, though they're good at jump balls, they're also good at breaking some things and getting down the field, especially Prather. And it was not the case. Texas tackled, like Gerald said, everything in front of them, had a plan that said keep it in front. And it is not like a little bit. It's not, you know, an accident. This is notable. This is, again, spending that XP, right? Last year, Texas gave up plays of 20 plus yards on almost 7% of their snaps, 58 out of 864. This year, they've done it on 3.4% of their snaps. Just to give a little kind of reference, Alabama's at 3.2, OU's at 4.7, UGA is at 4.7, right? So it's they are right now better than the Georgia defense at not giving up big plays, right? That's a big deal. That is a focus on changing something about the identity of a defense and the players executing it. So credit to the defensive staff and credit to the players. It did feel like they continued to get a pass rush. They were able to get home, probably the least mobile quarterback in the Big 12 for all of his strengths, as I sold. They were able to get home a couple times on those. But all in all, it just looked like, again, keep things in front of you. And the other part of that, jump in and break some of those passes up. 7 pass breakups is exactly what you need when you're playing that kind of bend, don't break, keep it in front of you, let the offense beat themselves. If you can also, you know, when they're running curl routes, step up, as Jameson did so beautifully on a guy who is, you know, 6-7 inches taller than him, in Ford Wheaton, he broke on the little kind of out curl, and at perfect timing, he actually tried to take it, pick 6, but I'll call it a pass breakup, cut in and made an NFL cornerback play to either intercept or keep that one from being caught. Also did it on a deep ball where he played it just right and batted it down. I thought they, if that's the evolution, if that's the light that clicked for this defense, then I think that's a really good step, because we'd done the first part, like, don't give up the big play, but we just let people absolutely eat us alive. What you would say would be a much worse quarterback in what he's shown in games not against Texas and Donovan Smith than what you saw in Daniels. Now, there were a couple drops, sure, but I will really put that the pass breakups were a big deal and a big reason why Texas was able to employ this strategy and really, for the majority of the game, blank West Virginia with it.
Yeah, and I think the other thing that I want to talk about here is a guy that you and I had on our players to watch is Baron Sorrell, right? he only had three tackles, but half of them were sacks. He had 1.5 sacks in a hurry. He has eclipsed last year's lead, Ben Davis, in 5 games. So doing much, Texas doing much better on that front, especially the Texas's ratio of pressures to sacks in previous weeks was way out of whack. And so the fact that he got home, but it's not just that he's now sitting third in the Big 12 with sacks and hurries, but the placement of his, of those two sacks, or the 1.5 sacks he shared one with Overshown, there was a big pickup from West Virginia. They were driving and then they pick up a first down. He sacks the quarterback on first down, puts him behind the chains, literally ends the drive. They punt. They are forced to punt. They go 3 incompletions and punt for that first one, or 2 incompletions and a punt. Second one, same deal. They're driving. They're putting together a drive. They complete a big, like, 30 or 40-yard first down. Sorrell and Overshown meet at the quarterback, take him down. It's now 2nd and 15. 3 straight incompletions. They turn it over on downs for 4th and 15. Texas takes over. So it's not just the fact that he got to the quarterback, but it's the fact that it seems like situationally Texas is dialing up the pressure, and he and DeMarvian Overshown to a lesser extent in this game, we're really finding a way to get to the quarterback and affect the passing game. It's really easy for guys like DeSean Jameson to look good, or Ryan Watts to look good, when JT Daniels is having to have happy feet in the pocket, when he's having to step up, when he's having to worry about multiple guys coming at his head, where, you know, DeMarvian Overshown is shooting gaps like a young Lawrence Taylor in some of these plays. Like, seeing that from those guys obviously boosts the back of your defense, right? Because the quarterback is not having time to read. That's part of the reason why last week Texas Tech looked like world beaters, because Texas was unable to do that a week ago. And he had all the time in the world to read the defense. And I'm going to just let you in on a secret. If wide receivers are running routes for 8 seconds, they're going to be open. They could have the best Hall of Fame. They could have prime time Deion Sanders, and they would get open, just because that's how football works. But, like, when the pass rush is better, the secondary is better. When the secondary is better, the pass rush is better. It's a recursive relationship. And so seeing not just the offensive and defense play complementary football, but seeing those two halves of the whole on defense play complementary football really paid dividends for Texas.
Yeah, that's a great point. And I have 3 quick things to add. One, the other guy who got a sack, and who just the way he did it, by, like, just submarining a pocket himself, like Moro Ojimo. I love what he can do when he, you know, he just gives something different with the way he's built on a defensive line. He missed that Tech game, and I kind of wonder if he could have given us a little something different in that one. He didn't travel with the team, but glad to see him back and contributing. Vernon Broughton played a lot as well, which is a good thing just to see. The other thing is I do want to shine a little bit on just how good of a season Jameson is having, playing himself into absolutely NFL draft territory, depending, you know, how the season goes, where, how high that is. But in this one, 5 targets, allowed just 1 catch for 8 yards, and again was covering 6'4", 225 Bryce Ford Wheaton. He's the only Big 12 corner with at least 19 targets on the year who's allowed less than 100 receiving yards. He's given up 79 through 5 games, only 6 of those after the catch. So even when Jameson is allowing the catch, he is doing something that I think has been a knock on him in previous years, getting in and making the sure tackle, getting the guy down, at least wrapping up and holding up till he can get help defense. So really great stuff from Jameson. I think Watts has had some really plus plays. He's a fantastic tackler. Want to just see him break up a couple more passes. But I mean, all in all, great play from our defensive backs there. And the just kind of,
it's amazing that moving the fastest defensive back on the field to the field side of the field rather than the boundary side would pay dividends.
Yeah, I mean, isn't that something? yeah, I mean, it's you wonder why it couldn't have happened sooner, but whatever. I will take it this year. I will take that it seems like this defensive staff, like we said earlier, adjusted to what happened, game plan differently, are, you know, really truly sticking to a scheme. And I think one game against Tech where a really wild kind of 6-for-8 on fourth downs and not all these short ones that made it feel like such a different game maybe skewed some fans' views of where this team and where this defense was. I will put one final kind of data point and maybe a caveat, right? Like maybe the grain of salt that we need before we just drink the Kool-Aid, right? Or salt that Kool-Aid a little so it's not quite so sweet. This
what
was at home again.
Are you making?
No, I'm saying this is if your Kool-Aid is sweet, you're guzzling it too fast. Maybe a little salt will be a tonic there. But this game was at home. Texas's defense has been absolutely lights out at home. The one time they've struggled, which I referenced, was the Tech game when they went on the road. They don't have a road game this week. They have a neutral site, but still they're away from the confines of DKR. And then they have some road games, some tough ones, coming up on the schedule. So I am absolutely willing to say that this defense is improved. They have improved from last year, hands down. Now let's see them improve week to week. Let's see them take that on the road. Let's see. We said that before the Tech game in our preview. Like, can they take that show on the road? And it did seem like maybe it was a slight reduction what their best football has been, which has been played at home. So let's see what they do in Dallas.
Couple of quick hits. Special teams, rather normal. Yeah, Bert Auburn. Texas has a kicker. Good to know. Bert Auburn, 1 of 1 for 45 yards to – again, continue his missless streak, I guess. Trejo averaged like 36 and a half yards per punt, which is not great, but he only had to punt twice, so like we're not super worried about that. All three kickoffs were tackled inside the 20, so that's a big boost for field position. Relatively sloppy game on the penalty front. The refs were weird. Again, we're not going to call. It's just weird officiating. The targeting rules were weird, and what is targeting, what isn't targeting, I'm still confused on it. But Texas had more penalties and more yardage than West Virginia, and also lost the time of possession battle, but got a W. It's all that matters.
Yeah, I'll just say we've had either roughing or targeting call each game that's been weird, right? And this one was the roughing on Finkley. That was just a soft, paper soft call. Really bad, you know. Again, the Bryce safety should have been safety call that was a roughing and targeting. The overshown targeting, which obviously bled into the Tech game. It just feels like we've had like a weird one each week, and I would like to break that streak. That would be nice.
Here's hoping. It might not happen against OU, so maybe don't hold your breath. Pod Stradamus update. Kyle and I are still tied heading in to Dallas. Kyle.
Gerald, do you consider fourth down stops as a turnover? Because I seem to remember the broadcasters saying that if you go for it in your own territory on fourth down, that's a turnover. If not, I'm okay with a push. I'm okay with a push.
We'll adjudicate this one at the end of the year and see how it goes. Much like my sack that should have been, we can call this one. If it's still tied at the end of the year, then we both get our extras or whatever we call it.
Well, no. Right now, as it stands, we are tied 5 for 5 with two extra, feathers in my cap.
Both
could affect me positively, but I like this. I like keeping it close. Makes it exciting. 5 for 5. What did we hit, Gerald?
160 total yards for running backs. 1 and 2 Texas got way past that with receiving yards included in there. Texas did not have a turnover, neither did West Virginia, so nobody won the turnover battle. I had two different players with a receiving touchdown. We had two different players with two different receiving touchdowns, so that was nice. And I thought Texas would have a return TD, but that did not happen, even though West Virginia likes to give them up. So we'll be back on Thursday with our full OU preview. We're excited for it. But Texas has a chance to go 2-1 in conference and deliver the knockout blow to the Oklahoma Sooners in 1. So that's the part of the show where we catch you up with all of the other news going on campus, and we down the 40. And we kick it off with some sad news. A player that Kyle and I actually got to see on campus, former All-American and Texas women's coach Tiffany Jackson, passed away Monday, right before we started recording. 3-time All-American, Freshman Player of the Year, one of the greats in the University of Texas basketball history. She was a likely election to the Hall of Honor at some point, but unfortunately she passed away on Monday after a seemingly long battle with cancer. So our thoughts and prayers go out to her and her family in this time. And it's just this one hits really hard for me because she was a favorite of mine. I got to cover her as a player at Texas, and life is fragile, life is short. Go out there and hug your loved ones.
Yeah, it is tough news. I mean, it doesn't make the loss any more devastating for her friends and family or anyone when you look at her accolades. It's devastating no matter what, but it is a tough lost for the field of basketball. I mean, she was a person. She'd come back and coached at UT. She was the head coach. And I mean, she had a lot of basketball ahead of her, a long career ahead of her, 10 years in the NBA, and then got back into coaching. She was just kind of starting there. But I mean, her time in the 40 Acres, she's an all-time, when we have our Rushmore conversation, she's in there, a three-time All-American Freshman Player of the Year, holds school records for free throws made, attempted, all-time minutes per game leader, the only player ever to record 1,000 points, 1,000 rebounds, 300 steals, and 150 blocks. Was a really all-around player, kind of for Coach Conrad's final years, right? The last superstar under Coach Conrad, or one of the last in her time at UT. So just a really really tough loss for Longhorn Nation. And like Gerald said, let this be just one more reminder to hug, love, text, call, tweet at, whatever, the people you love, and tell them you love them. That's, can't ever do that too many times. So somber news, but a lot of thoughts, prayers, and horns up for Jackson, her family, and all of Longhorn Nation tonight.
Absolutely, man. Go hug your loved ones. Tell them you love them, because this life is short. Four-star wide receiver, former commitment, Jonah Wilson, surprised decommitted on Saturday right before Texas kicked off. Was a blow to Texas's receiving room. He was an early grab for Brendan Marion. Was having a massive, massive senior year. So this one, going to be interesting to see how it works out. He said that he felt like he committed too early and wanted to just take a step back and really evaluate. And obviously Texas is still in things, but man, that one, that's weird and frustrating. Like, I don't think anybody knew it was coming. There were no crystal ball flips. There was no smoke of it on any of the message boards. Just a really weird one to come out of left field.
Yeah. I mean, it's interesting. I saw him after the Alabama game, didn't talk to him, but saw him as I was walking out, and he just had a look in the way he was talking to some other recruits, like, you know, we're gonna get him when I'm here, like, we're gonna beat Bama. Just had a, I don't know, the way he was, it didn't look like anything. That was a couple weeks ago, and it sounds like from all reports the coaches also had no indication that this was coming, which is tough. Of course, everyone should enjoy their recruitment and go through the entire process as much as they want to. I don't think he's, you know, out of the running at Texas. I don't think anyone should write him off, but we'll wish him success wherever he goes. Hopefully he gets it figured out and makes his way back to committing to the 40 acres. But yeah, very, very interesting one. We'll keep an eye and see what else happens, not just this, but any other recruits in coming days. But maybe a big OU win will help everybody feel better.
Another win that helped us feel better is Texas sweeping Texas Tech in Lubbock on the volleyball court. Number one Texas volleyball. The Lubbock folks were hyping it, playing on their basketball court, but it turned out that wasn't going to happen for you.
Yeah, a sweep in front of a Tech volleyball all-time record crowd of 6,037. It's tough. I hate for Tech that all of their record crowds are when they play Texas. It seems to be what gets their excitement up. And you know, hate to see them just get absolutely swept after all of that promotion. Texas seventh sweep of the season. Madison Skinner kind of carried the team for large stretches in this one. Tighter season high with 19 kills, hitting about 530, 10 kills in that final set to close it out. Obviously Logan Eggleston also does what she does, 17 kills and 6 digs. Zoe Fleck had a match high 20 digs in this one.
Another big match, you know, after, I feel like that KU game really, that KU match really like kind of scared them straight a little bit. So I'm curious to see how much of a hot knife through butter situation this turns out to be for the rest of conference play. Speaking of, they're hosting TCU at home on Wednesday, so look out for that one. We'll have more updates for you as it comes. Number 22 soccer tops Baylor 1-0, improving to 8-1-3 overall, keeping that unbeaten streak going. Just an absolute tear from these ladies. We're excited to see the development from the young legs.
Yeah, Trinity Byers' conference leading 11th goal came in the 27th minute. She was the fastest player to get her 10th goal last week in a season. So naturally, she would get her 11th in the next game. And you know, could be having herself one of the better all-time scoring seasons in Texas soccer history. But the hero maybe in this one, and don't take anything away from Byers. It was a solo goal where she got the ball, beat one player, got in the box, quick shifted in her feet just in a way that few players at the college level really can, just beat someone one-on-one and then slot it in the corner. Just it was a you know, national team caliber goal, and so good on her. But Savannah Madden had a career or season high, excuse me, 9 saves in this one, and really kept that clean sheet and earned every bit of it. So so good on the sophomore and the super senior.
Next up for Texas is Thursday at home against Kansas State, and then Kansas on Sunday. Also, happy birthday to Coach Kelly. Congratulations. Finally 21.
That's right. We're recording this on Monday, so when it comes out Tuesday, just make sure you add belated to your happy birthday tweets to Coach Kelly.
Softball knocks off St. Mary's in a continued beating of fall opponents 8-1 in 10 innings. 7 different Longhorns had at least one RBI to continue their absolute just tear through the fall ball. It feels almost unfair.
Yeah, a lot of new names in this one, but it's good to see some players contributing in a deep squad. And you know, you win all your games in spring by preparing in fall. So keep it up.
Tennis, the men are headed to Tulsa and the women to Cary, North Carolina to participate in the ITA All-American Championships. That's actually running now and will end on the 9th. We'll obviously have updates for you as well. Keeping it country club, number 5 women's golf is in Chicago for the Windy City Collegiate Classic. Currently sitting at 27 over, tied at number 10. The men are tied at 7 at 4 over at the Fort Worth Ben Hogan Collegiate Invitational. That'll end on Tuesday.
Again, that's why you play in the fall to get ready for the spring. It's back-to-back runner-up finishes for the women who risen to the top 10. They did have a pretty crazy rise the final day in their last tournament. Maybe they can really do something in the last 18, but plus 27 is not a small number. I imagine it must have been windy at the Windy City Collegiate Classic, but hopefully they get this one right there.
I mean, that would have to be like 20 something under on the final day of the tournament to make a run at the podium. But now's the part of the show where we honor one of the best traditions in all of college athletics, Big Bertha, and we bang the drum, brought to you by Joe Ruiz. So Kyle, what are you banging the drum on this week?
I mean, we watched a really great game of football, but even in it, there was a moment of kind of somberness at respect to the Longhorn fans. First of all, it seemed that everyone in the stadium had the horns up and was being respectful to the fact that, you know, CJ Donaldson was down injured for quite a long time, and obviously that's scary when you cut a player's jersey and pads and helmet off to get him out of there. And a lot of actually West Virginia folks on social media have been crediting the Longhorns, right? I think rivalries are great, but humans are certainly more important. Remember, these are not enemies, right? They are human beings on another team. We might hate the team or losing to that team, but we love the players. But kudos first of all to Texas fans. But it felt a little bit like Gerald talked about earlier, kind of the pit in your stomach. And I've been at games where there have been serious injuries, career-ending injuries, even, and it's hard to continue to play after that because you're also human, and you also look over and see a guy get carted off and think about your own humanity in that moment. And even as fans, as we were watching that and then thinking back to the fact that OU a few hours earlier had Damon Harmon in a scary injury in a similar situation. And so, you know, we both come into this week, OU fans and Texas fans, having watched that the week before, and I mean, it's just a reminder that football is a fun game. It's a beautiful game. You're looking at offensive schemes against defensive adjustments and wild special teams plays and crazy 2-point conversion sets and the pageantry of college football and the rivalry and the weird quirky things. Like, it's great and it's wonderful and it's perfect and I love it. But it's a violent game and there's a reminder to that. And we think about the targeting rules that have been put in place to try to reduce that. Sometimes, you know, Gerald and I have said we don't have any issue with those rules being there. We have issues sometimes with how they're applied in bizarre situations and not in others, right? You watched OU against TCU earlier in that game have a very clear and dangerous targeting on a defenseless player, which also should have been a pass interference when a defensive back came early and just unloaded on a TCU wide receiver that went uncalled. So it's more the unevenness on how they're called. But that all said, is just, you know, take none of it for granted, right? We've heard participation numbers go down, and they change to different things for youth football, and it's changing, and we're adapting, we're doing all the things. But just try to appreciate it, because at any given time, right, these human beings who are out here playing football can have one slip, one drop of the head, and it hits somebody's knee or shoulder or whatever, and it could be career ending. It could knock you out. It could, you know, you could never quite be right. We've had linebackers in Gabriel Floyd and running backs in Darian Brown who never even made it to campus, and Matt Nader, you know, from Westlake Lineman a few years ago with a heart thing, right? Like it's these human beings are not just how good they are as football players. We love them for that, but also, you know, we wish them long and healthy and prosperous lives after football. So, you know, enjoy the football while we have it, while these players have it. But also, again, this is why we say we never ever get upset at a player for making what's the business decision. Do what's right for you, and enjoy these players while we have them, and always root for health on both sides.
Yeah, I mean, it is a violent game, and the rules in place are there with the intent to make it safer. And to be honest with you, without these kinds of rules, I don't know if the game of football in and of itself could survive, because again, you run out of people to play it. And I think, you know, especially like, I'm also a Miami Dolphins fan, and so seeing everything that went on with Tua Tagovailoa, them rushing him back and him getting knocked out on a routine play and being in the fencing position after just a routine hit his head on the turf kind of situation, meaning that he was very concussed a week ago and they did not give him ample time to heal. It's easy to forget that there are humans inside the uniforms. It is easy to forget that what we are watching is not, it is, and I'm just going to say, it is modern gladiatorial like battles in the Colosseum is what it is. It's what we're watching. And it's tough. There's a lot of reckoning that we have to do with ourselves, and reconciling we have to do with ourselves for that. And so there's a lot of conversations to have, but overall it is a violent game. It's a beautiful game. I love sports and what sports teach you. Again, it's just, these are people. We have to remember that they are people. So I'm banging the drum this week on good old fashioned hatred. If you know, if you're listening to this podcast, then you know it is OU Hate Week. It is OU Hate Week, and it is, I'm a big fan of Parks and Rec, and there's an episode where Jason Mantzoukas is this, like cologne magnate, I think is what he does. But people are protesting outside of his factory, and he gets a megaphone and just screams, "I am fueled by your hatred." And that's the fun of this week, and that's the fun of college football, and that's the fun of college sports. It's the rivalries. It's these moments where, like, simply because of like geography, where you went to school, who you cheer for, but it's all meant to be in fun, right? And that's the thing that we have to like remind ourselves is like, it can go too far. It has gone too far, and it will go too far again. But this is meant to be fun. The rivalry, the jokes about the coach jokes on Thursdays is my favorite thing about Hate Week, where it's just come up with random things, the random untrue facts about the opponent's coach just for funsies, right? It's all supposed to be fun in games. It is all supposed to be fun in games. It is not that serious. And again, I'm going to be cheering my heart out. I'm going to be hyped. I will live and die by what happens with those 22 teenagers for 60 minutes on Saturday. It will affect my entire week and probably the rest of the year to boot. But like, let's not lose sight of the fact that it's supposed to be fun. It is supposed to be a good time. And just enjoy the hate. Enjoy the moment. Relish in it.
Gerald, you were, of course, referencing Dennis Feinstein, famous Parks and Rec character. Gosh, they have so many great bit characters. But yes, like bit characters who sometimes become heroes in this game, it'll be curious to see who steps up and makes the plays for the Longhorns. But either way, they will become heroes. We will cheer them on. I still remember Chris Ogbonnaya's 98-second run that took forever, and I believe Gerald has opinions on whether he actually got in the end or not. He scored. We know that he scored. It is the start of OU Hate Week, and that is a beautiful thing. Gerald, I believe, was recording this. It is 9:17 p.m. Does that mean anything to you?
It means that OU still sucks.
That is correct. That is exactly.
And that's all the time we've got for you today. Kyle, where can good folks find you on the internet?
Oh, you can follow me on Twitter at Kyle Carbon. You can also follow the Texas Pregamer at Texas.
You can follow me on Twitter. I am at GH Goodridge. Follow the show on Twitter at Longhorn Pod. Facebook and Instagram, The Longhorn Republic. Or shoot us an email, longhornrepublicpod@gmail.com. So we'll be back on Thursday with our full OU preview. We're excited to do that. And so until then, hook 'em.
Start Xavier Worthy at quarterback, you cowards.